Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 727 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Superman Sunday episode, and today I'm going to be talking about Action Comics number 1007. It's written by Brian Michael Bendis. We have art by Steve Epting. Colors are by Brad Anderson, and letters are by Josh Reed. This is part one of the Leviathan Rising story, or Leviathan Rises, I should say. And again, I have to, I don't like to be negative. You guys all know that. I want to talk about positive comics. I want to help spread the love of comics and talk about things that I really enjoy. And I was really enjoying Superman before Brian Michael Bendis came on board. And it's not that I'm not enjoying it now. I'm not enjoying it as much on a consistent basis. Some of the issues are really, really good. Others not so much. And I'm struggling because I feel like maybe I'm just kind of complaining and wailing into the ether because Bendis is changing things up. He's changing up the status quo. And, you know, comic collectors and readers in general don't seem to want or like change. And so I'm trying to stay objective and I'm trying not to think that this is just that, right? This is just me adjusting to change. Because I do think there was a lot of change between the new 52 Superman and then what was most recently done with Rebirth, you know, bringing the pre-Flashpoint Superman and pre-Flashpoint Lois, finding a creative and interesting way to get rid of the new 52 Superman, the new 52 Lois, so that we could have the Superman and Lois that was beloved for so long from that period post-crisis to pre-Flashpoint. And not only that, but growth and change. You know, yes, they're married. Yes, they love each other. Yes, they trust. And yes, they now have a son. So to me, that was change. And I was okay with it. I didn't actually hear too many people that didn't like it. I did hear a few people that weren't fans of John Kent, this new Superboy, you know, specifically. But I never heard of anybody that was kind of complaining about the whole idea of Lois and Clark having a child. And now Bendis comes in and it just seems like he wants to change everything and regress. And maybe that's where I have the biggest problem. It's not that he's introducing new things or making changes. It's that the changes that he's making feel like regression to me. Because really what he wants to do is he wants to tell stories of Superman that seem to be unencumbered by them having a child or them being married. And it just doesn't make sense. It feels like he's making changes or he's doing things so that he can tell the story that he wants to tell, which every writer has that right. You know, DC Comics seems to trust him to steer the Superman forward. But when you're doing it at the expense of the character or the characters in the title, that's where I start having a problem. And it seems like the changes that Bendis is making, not only do they not quite seem necessary, they don't seem in character or in keeping with what we know of these characters. And we see it again in Action Comics 1000. Now, I have vastly preferred the Superman title as opposed to the Action title. I feel like the Superman title is the much more sort of superhero, superheroic, cosmic aspect of the Superman books. And Action Comics, it seems like, it's the one that's more focused on the Daily Planet, which I'm okay with that. It's focused on Clark Kent and Lois Lane as opposed to Superman. And it's about, you know, investigative journalism and more street-level criminals. And now we have this Leviathan organization that actually does seem like they're pretty powerful and may need Superman to be the one to deal with them. But the point being with this cabal of organized criminals operating in Metropolis under Superman's nose. And it just seems like this is like a crime comic. It's Bendis trying to tell a Superman crime story. And I don't think it works in this day and age, especially because Bendis is the one himself who went out of the way in the Man of Steel miniseries to show just how powerful Superman was. You can't even say his name. He's always listening. He's always looking. And somehow we're supposed to think that this criminal organization with these people that for the most part don't have any superpowers have been able to put one over on the Man of Steel for years and years. and they're basically running Metropolis. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. Superman is too powerful. Bendis himself established that. Lois and Clark as reporters are too intelligent. They have too many sources. They would have heard something by now. So these little retcons and these little changes that Bendis is putting in aren't working. Like, if he wanted to tell this story and have it happen in Gotham, or even better, another city, not Gotham, not Metropolis, but another city, and tell the story with a different hero, I would have been fine with that. It's not that it's a terrible story. I just think it's a terrible Superman story. And again, I could maybe even live with it. I could maybe be like, okay, let's see where it goes. Let me give him the benefit of the doubt. But then he throws in this stuff, these changes with Lois and Clark's relationship. And to me, the relationship between Superman and Lois, between Clark and Lois, between man and wife is so sacrosanct, you can't mess with it. And this whole, we need to be living separate lives and have this sort of open marriage kind of thing. No, I just hate it. I absolutely hate it. It seems so out of character. And Lois does something in this issue that, again, I'm like, no. Have you never read a Superman comic? Have you never read some of the wonderful stories that previous writers have told about how special the relationship is between Lois and Clark, about how much they love each other and they trust each other? And to me, Lois just would not do this. She just would not behave this way. And like I said, in this particular issue, she does something else that's so wildly out of character that I find myself reading it going, what? Who is this person? To me, she's not recognizable as Lois Lane. And I just don't understand it. I find myself asking, why are you doing this, Bendis? And I don't see anyone else really complaining about it. Maybe I'm the only one who dislikes these wholesale changes, these big climactic changes that are happening in the Superman titles. Because again, I'm not hearing anyone else talk about it. The only thing I've heard is that the sales for these Superman books are nowhere near what DC hoped they would be, based on the kind of the name recognition of Bendis. So I don't know if that's because everybody that was reading Superman before Bendis came on kind of jumped ship after a couple issues because it was going too slow, because Bendis does tend to write moves at a much slower pace than it did with Peter J. Tomasi and Patrick Gleason on Superman and Dan Jurgens on Action Comics. Maybe they don't like the story that he's telling. Like I don't seem to like it. I don't know what the reason is. But if you look on social media, all the stuff that Bendis promotes and DC promotes, obviously it's going to be the positive stuff. So I'm really curious. So if you're reading it and really enjoying it, please reach out to me and tell me why I'm wrong and what I'm missing. I know Adam, unfortunately, he hasn't, from Talking Superman, he's been really busy lately and hasn't been able to join me. I know he's been enjoying it because it feels so different. And I suppose that's a valid point, but from my point of view, I'm like, it can't feel so different that it stops feeling like Superman and it stops feeling like Lois. And to me, Superman has been, he's been pretty okay. He still feels like Superman. The story moves too slow for my taste, but that I've always had that complaint about Bendis' work. But my biggest complaint about the Action Comics story and everything, really honestly, is the relationship, the changes he's making with Lois and Clark. And again, it just doesn't make sense to me. I want Bendis to explain it or have Lois explain it to us, because I don't think it's been explained well at all. Her excuses or her reasoning was flawed, I feel, and it just feels unnecessary. I think that if you take that conversation out, Lois has been in the book enough that you could think that, yeah, they're still having their regular relationship, and you know it's going to ebb and flow. She's going to show up more sometimes, less others. But I just don't. It just didn't feel necessary, because you know, with John having returned recently in the pages of Superman. Again, it doesn't, from the outside looking in, it doesn't necessarily look like their relationship has changed, except for that speech that Lois gave when she first came back, and the fact that she she hid her return from him. And it doesn't feel necessary. It doesn't feel like something Lois would do. And it just doesn't feel necessary. And then the action she takes in this issue, again, it doesn't feel necessary. I don't understand it. And I want an explanation. So if you have one, please reach out and let me know. Maybe somebody will say something that really kind of resonates with me and I can have a better understanding of these choices that Bendis made. So let me go ahead and give a quick synopsis of the issue. And again, I hate to be negative. I'm going to keep reading Superman. I don't have any plans to drop it anytime soon. He's my favorite character. I just wish I was enjoying it more. I just wish that I just wish it had a different tone and mood and feel. I think it had a very great feel when Jurgens was writing action. It had that hopeful feel. It had that feel that Rebirth first gave us when we read that Rebirth special when Wally West returned. And now it doesn't feel like that anymore. And I almost feel like there are times I'm reading it out of obligation instead of because I'm enjoying it. I keep kind of waiting and hoping it's going to get better. Maybe that's where the hope comes in. I keep hoping it's going to get better. But, you know, we get a decent issue here or there. Sometimes we get a good issue of Superman. But so far we haven't gotten more than maybe a slightly above average issue of action. And again, I just think this is not a good storyline for Superman. This noirish feel, it doesn't work for the character, in my opinion. So anyway, this issue, Action Comics 1007, as I said, Leviathan Rising Part 1. It starts off, we get the full-page splash that Bendis likes to give. And this time it's Jimmy Olsen with all his cameras, his camera bag, and what looks to be an iPad. Or, you know, something similar, the Metropolis equivalent of it, with some messages, some notifications, some messages from Perry White saying, I need your photos or I'm going to fire you. Messages from someone named Ella Loves Snakes, who we're going to meet here in just a second. And on the next page, we see that they're in Seattle, Jimmy and some girl who's riding a motorcycle. He's holding on to her, and it is indeed the girl, Ella, and she wants to share something with him. And Jimmy's like, in this part of town, you want to share something with me? And she says, yeah, it's the sexy part. Now listen, I really like you, Jimmy, and what you're going to see is hard to describe, but you make me feel safe, and not a lot of things in this world do, so I want to share this with you. And she kisses him and then says, I know this is a lot to take in. It was a lot for me to take in when I first did. But once I let it in to my life, everything changed, and I finally understood the way the world works in ways no one could ever explain, and I just want you to come in with an open mind and stay for the whole thing. And Jimmy says, I hear drums. And Ella leads him inside, and she says, just stay with me till the end. Promise me that you will, and it'll be worth your while. So Jimmy agrees, and as they walk into this warehouse, we see Jimmy start to roll his eyes and drop an expletive as across the warehouse on a stage, we see Cobra, a Cobra leader, saying, as predicted, the world's about to fall. Greed and hubris are a sickness that are standing in the way. We are Cobra, faith to Kali Yuga. We are the future. And Ella is telling Jimmy, this is what I wanted to tell you. This is who I really am. And he says, Cobra? You're a lizard person? And she says, no, it's not like that. It's a philosophy. It's a way of life. And Jimmy says, no, it's a murderous cult. And Ella, you know, having completely bought in, says, no, that's just the fake media selling their own cult agenda. And they are the cult. The media is the cult. We are the future. We are the species that are free of that poison. And as everyone starts to chant faith to Yali Uga, Ella goes on to say, I know that this is a lot to swallow, but I know you're an open-minded person. There are truths here and pleasures and understanding, and not everybody's prepared for it, but I think you can be. And she kisses Jimmy again, and Jimmy, he's not having it. So he kind of reverts back to his reporter roots, his photographer roots, and he pulls out his camera phone. He starts taking pictures. And that's a bridge too far for Ella. She yells at him to stop. And when he doesn't, she cusses him out and says, "This guy took pictures. He's a traitor. He's got a camera. Get him." And Jimmy runs through the crowd, heads for Ella's motorcycle to try and escape. And just as he's about to reach the motorcycle, there's a blue light and a big explosion that tosses Jimmy all the way across the street through the plate glass window of the bakery across the street. And Jimmy continues to take photos as we see this bright spherical light expand and consume the entire building that Cobra was having their meeting in. And after Jimmy climbs his way out of the bakery window and approaches where the building once stood, it's just a giant smoking crater. So on the next page, we see Jimmy asleep on the couch in Perry White's office, and we get some of that patented Brian Michael Bendis banter where Jimmy says, "Morning, Chief," and Perry White responds, "Why?" Jimmy says, "Why I'm in your office?" Perry says, "No, why are you like this in general?" And Jimmy says, "I fell asleep?" And Perry, "Are you asking me?" And so finally Perry's had enough. He says, "Give." And Jimmy says, "Give?" He says, "Yeah, give me your building security clearance." And Jimmy says, "Well, you already took it after I accidentally let the parasite in the break room." He says, "You know what? Never mind. I don't care how you got in here. Just get out." Jimmy says, "Of your office?" Perry says, "No, of the multiverse. Do you have anything I can publish?" And Jimmy does have those pictures, but he hesitates. Perry says, is not, "I have an award-winning piece of photojournalism." It doesn't translate like that. So get out. And so in the newsroom a few minutes later, we see Jimmy sitting at his desk. Clark is standing nearby and kind of looking over his shoulder at Robinson Good. We know he has his suspicions about her, and rightly so. And Jimmy tries to confide in Clark. He's saying, "Mr. Kent, I have a problem. It's something really shocking, and I don't want to say it just yet, but I'm sitting on something, and I know I can trust Mr. White, but I don't know if I can trust whoever owns this paper, because again, remember, the Daily Planet just got sold." And so Jimmy says, "I need to be covert about this till we know who owns the paper and who they're working for." And again, he's looking for some advice. But as Clark is watching Robinson Good, she gets up to leave, and he's totally distracted by following her, and he's not even really listening to Jimmy. And as Robinson leaves, Clark leaves to follow her and says, "Can I get you to hold that thought?" to Jimmy. And Jimmy kind of sighs and says, "Well, my point is that I kissed a lizard person." So meanwhile, at the Exelon Observatory, we see Lois standing outside waiting to meet somebody. It turns out it's her father. And this is the moment of the issue where I absolutely hate what's about to happen. And again, I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense. It's wildly out of character, in my opinion. But Sam Lane says, "You look healthy. Why are we meeting out here?" And Lois says, "Well, I just wanted to talk to you privately about both our jobs, and I want to make sure that no one's listening." And so General Sam Lane pulls out a device, hits a button, and says, this is a little signal scrambler, toy from Argus, and we should be in the clear now." Which immediately I think, like, Lois says she wants to talk privately. They're out in the middle of this park at the observatory, but that doesn't mean nobody can listen. Yeah, you can notice if anybody's around, but between parabolic microphones and satellites in space, like, what makes you think that being out in the open where people can see you means that nobody's listening? You'd be much better off in a small dark room that you swept for bugs and made sure nobody was listening. So right off the bat, I'm like, no, this is the exact opposite of what you would be doing. So that doesn't make sense. That's just a little nitpick thing. I could live with that, but it's about to get much worse. So once General Lane makes sure that nobody's listening, his first question is, "John okay?" And Lois kind of ignores the question and says, "A lot's happened lately, and I've learned a lot about myself and a lot about what I want out of life and out of my family." And apparently what she wants out of her family is to not even be married anymore, or be in an open marriage, I guess, because that's what Bendis is having her do. But again, that doesn't make sense for who the character is. And if she does want that, if she does want to live a separate life, because her life's not normal, like she was telling Superman the other day, why would she bring up that she what she wants out of her life and out of her family. Again, it's I don't understand what Bendis is doing. But anyway, she goes on to say, I don't enjoy fighting with you, Dad. I don't enjoy the relationship we have now. And I know that we bring out the best in each other because we challenge each other. But I think that we also bring out the worst. And we're so alike. And it's probably the reason that everybody says that I am you. We're the same person. And, you know, John's away for the summer. And I'm watching another father relationship struggle around me because Clark obviously misses John. And I can't imagine having a bad relationship with my son the way you and I have a bad relationship. And I think that General Lane believes that Lois is kind of there to kind of rehash their what's bad about their relationship. And so he kind of relents a little bit and says, yeah, you know, I know I'm not the easiest guy to get along with because I don't trust people. It's part of what makes me so good at my job. And Lois acknowledges that. She says, yeah, I know. But oddly, it's also what makes people feel like they need to lie to you because you don't trust them, so they in turn don't trust you. And Lane says, who lies to me? And Lois is like, everybody. And Lane says, even you? He says, yes, sir. Well, what about? And Lois whispers to herself, this conversation should have happened before my wedding day. As much as I don't like what's about to happen, I feel like in a way she's right. But that's the whole point, right? Like, what she's about to do is bad enough, but what makes it really terrible is the fact that she didn't talk to Clark about it first. And she's right. This conversation probably should have taken place before her wedding day, and it should have been a conversation with three people. But instead, Lois chooses to betray a trust here. It's to me, it's unconscionable that she wouldn't talk to Clark about it first. But anyway, she says, I should have trusted you with this because you're my father. And even though you and I disagree about just about every subject, I think you would have seen that this man that you don't trust because you don't understand him. And Lane interrupts, man. And Lois goes on to say, completely adores your daughter. He completely understands me and he completely loves me. And Sam Lane's like, are you okay? She says, yes, I'm very okay. I'm telling you, I'm very much in love. And Sam Lane's like, I know that. You're married to Clark. You guys are totally in love. But Lois finishes with this, with Superman. I'm telling you, I'm very much in love with Superman. And look on Lane's face, he immediately understands it, right? Like, this guy does not like Superman. This guy sees Superman as an outsider, an alien who doesn't belong. He's tried at various times to control Superman, and there's no trust there at all. And Lois has just told her father that Superman and Clark are one and the same without consulting Clark at all. Totally betrayed his trust, totally put General Lane in another level of danger now that he knows the secret. You know, and she professes to love Superman and, you know, I'm very much in love and he understands me and I understand him. But again, what's with the whole we need to live separate lives? It just infuriates me. Anyway, Lois goes on to say, Superman is and always has been the father of your grandson who, by the way, is spending the summer with his other grandfather on the other side of the galaxy. He's okay. In fact, he's great. It's all very strange, but this is our family. So not only has she betrayed Clark by giving away his secret identity, she's also just outed her son. And for what reason again? For this guy who you don't trust, who you lied to, who you shouldn't be trusting, who doesn't trust Superman, who didn't trust Clark at first, but finally got to the place where they had a decent relationship, and now you're just dumping all this on him without talking to Clark? Yeah, I hate this. Anyway, Lois goes on to say, I spent so much of my life looking for the truth. I married a man who dedicated his life to it, and yet there's this big lie. Well, by that reasoning, Lois, you should out Superman to everybody. You should tell everybody in the whole world that Clark Kent and Superman are one and the same. Because Superman is dedicated to the truth. Clark Kent is dedicated to the truth. And yet there is this big lie that Superman and Clark believe is necessary in order to keep those they love safe, in order to have somewhat of a normal life, which I feel like Superman deserves based on all the sacrifices he makes. So, again, by this reasoning, Lois, there's this big lie and you feel necessary to tell your father, then you should feel necessary to tell everybody if you're that dedicated to your life as a reporter. So again, this is not a character I like. So to me, this is not Lois Lane. I love Lois Lane. I think Lois Lane is one of the greatest characters in the history of comics, let alone DC, female, whatever kind of condition you want to put on it. No, she is simply a great character with strong convictions, strong beliefs, and the Lois I know would not do this. So Lois goes on to say, I know why I did it, and you know why I did it, but I was wrong, period. A man, a truly great man, who absolutely loves your daughter for all the right reasons, and for all his x-ray vision and all the other things he can do, he sees my faults and he loves me anyway. And so your goal as a father has to have been to hear words like this one day, that your daughter would trust you this much. And all Sam Lane can say is, Lois, is this for real? And she says yes, and he just turns and walks away. So that's a whole nother conversation that I'm not even going to get into. Bad enough she did this, but what did you think was going to happen? This is General Sam Lane. Based on his convictions and his past behavior and everything that this guy is, he's never going to accept Superman, whether Superman's married to his daughter or not. In fact, he's probably going to feel even more infuriated and hate Superman even more. Lois is an intelligent person. She had to know that this was going to be her father's reaction. And as she watches him walk away, she gets a tear in her eye. And again, I'm left wondering, well, what did you think was going to happen? I don't know. Maybe this is not Lois. Maybe that's all I can hope, is that Lois is still in space and this is a Skrull that came back. I know, wrong universe, right? This is some shape-shifting alien that came back and took Lois's place, because this is not Lois. I'm sorry. And what makes it even that much more infuriating is Bendis has talked about how he feels that Lois is the most heroic person and the best character in the DC universe. He certainly doesn't treat her like it. And I can only hope. There's supposed to be a Lois Lane series coming up soon from Greg Rucka, and I can only hope that Rucka repairs the damage that Bendis has done in my mind. Anyway, on the next page, it's Atlanta, Georgia, and Superman is flying through the city trying to get to the bottom of this traffic jam that's going on, as some kids on a bus say, hey, we've been stuck in this traffic for an hour. And Superman says, let me fly up ahead and see if I can't find out what's going on. And as he's flying over the traffic, he hears somebody call his name, or yell his name, I should say. And as he turns and looks, he sees a figure falling out of a building. And he flies really, really fast, and he gets there just in the nick of time. Incredible art by Steve Epting here, by the way. He really uses some great speed lines and such to show movement and to show just how fast Superman is moving. And he catches the person right before they hit the ground. And it turns out it's Amanda Waller. And he asks her really quick, who did this to you? And she says, up there, I didn't get a good look, but you know, I'm leader of the Task Force X. I'm leader of the Suicide Squad. And my whereabouts are always top secret. So if they knew I was there, they had some pretty serious intel, inside information, dangerous information. And Superman is flying up toward the top of the building at a high rate of speed. He's using his X-ray vision to try to see and get any information he can. And he says, I'm not seeing anything with my X-ray vision. And as he starts to say that, the building basically explodes. And we see a giant blue ball of light and energy, much like we saw when the Cobra cult building exploded. And Superman is yelling for everybody to evacuate. And he helps rescue some of the people from the building to keep them from falling or dying. And when he lands in the street on the sidewalk where he left Amanda Waller, he calls her name a few times and looks around, but she's gone. And we get the blurb, death to the DEO. So it's clear, I'll guess that it's Leviathan that's behind these explosions, since we didn't get any other Leviathan-related stuff here, other than we know this is the first part of Leviathan Rising. And apparently the way they're going to rise is by taking out these other cults and kind of secret organizations of the DC universe so that they have less competition and they can kind of extend and exert their control over various factions and areas of the DC universe. I'm guessing that's what it is. So I suppose in a way that's a relief or a step in the right direction. Leviathan is much more formidable than this cabal of kind of street-level criminals that have been operating in Metropolis. So at least it's more of a threat that Superman should be dealing with. Unless, of course, Bendis decides to tie it all together and it turns out that the people in Metropolis are more of an extension of Leviathan, which is entirely possible. And I almost hope that that's the case, because then it would kind of explain a little better how they're able to hide from Superman. It would kind of show us that, yes, this organization was more powerful and had more assets than we were led to believe. But it doesn't really explain why they're robbing banks and doing kind of street-level crime. Leviathan itself seems to be sort of above that. So this was a really fast-paced issue. It's basically three acts, and they don't necessarily feel like they tie together very well either. So maybe that's another part of the reason I didn't care that much for this issue. We basically have that first section with Jimmy Olsen. Then we have the middle section where Lois betrays Clark by telling her father that he's Superman. And then we get this last section that just lasts a couple pages where Amanda Waller almost dies. So again, really fast-paced, because it felt like it was over before it even got started. Doesn't feel like we got a big chunk of story, but it's still, you know, the normal 20 pages. So I suppose because, like I said, it's divided up into just a few pages here or there. And there's also not a lot of dialogue. The Steve Epting art is really good, but I mean, we get a whole page of Lois watching her father walk away from her at the observatory. That's four panels, and there's not a single word on the panel. Then later, when Superman is flying towards the building to catch this person that's falling, this person that turns out to be Amanda Waller, we get six widescreen panels on that page that, you know, stretch across the whole page. We get some sense of movement, some sense of storytelling with those speed lines that Epting gives us. But again, not a single page of dialogue. And then the following page, there's only four panels, one of which takes up almost the whole page. And the only dialogue there is Amanda Waller. So again, there's a lot of big panels, a lot of big splash pages, not a lot of dialogue. And that kind of lends to a really quick read, which kind of leaves me feeling a little less satisfied. I mean, by far the most dialogue we get and the most panels we get is in the conversation that Lois has with her father. And I almost wish that it wasn't there, right? So all in all, I really dislike this issue. It's kind of a tie. I don't know which one I like worse or less. This one with Lois betraying Clark and Superman, however you want to label him, or the one where she tells Superman that they need to be living their own lives, kind of separate from each other. I don't know which is worse, honestly. They're both a betrayal, and they both feel wildly out of character with Lois. But maybe I'm completely wrong, and you guys are all yelling at your phone or your whatever, your iPad or whatever you're listening to this podcast on. And please reach out and tell me how wrong I am and how I should be trusting in Bendis. But it's been quite a few issues now, or seven issues. It's over half a year, and I'm still waiting to understand what Bendis's take on Superman is. Or maybe I'm not. Maybe I don't want to accept what his take on Superman is, because we haven't gotten that much characterization with Superman in the action book, other than when he was kind of mopey at first when Lois and John were first gone following the Man of Steel miniseries. But part of it is how slowly he writes. Like I said, his stuff tends to kind of drag on. Which just seems so incongruous, because again, I said, talking about how fast paced this issue was and how quickly it was over. But again, we're getting story and we're getting events happening, but I feel like we're not getting enough substance with characterization for Superman himself. I mean, this is Action Comics. I feel like we need that. We're getting a lot of characterization for Lois, really understanding her, but somehow she's not the Lois Lane that I've spent the last, 40 years of my life reading about. Somehow she's morphed into somebody else that I don't recognize, and someone that I don't trust and don't really like very much. And that's not good. So if there's going to be anything that makes me drop this title, it's going to be Bendis's treatment of Lois. I feel like he's just done her such a disservice. And again, it's just such a giant disappointment, because he went on and on. So many times I read interviews and I saw him at talk about it at New York Comic Con, just about just how much of a fan of Lois he was, how much he loved the character, and it's not borne out in his actions, in my mind. So, again, I don't like to be negative, and I guess maybe I'll try to do more of the Superman chronology episodes, where we're talking about the post-crisis Superman. We're working on the world of Metropolis right now. That stuff seems to be a lot more in the spirit of Superman, and the hope and who he is as a character and what he stands for than the stuff Bendis is doing right now. Maybe I'll be able to go back to this stuff in a few years from now, and I'll see it in a different light if Bendis can sort of bring Superman up to the level that I think he should be. But again, I don't understand what Bendis is trying to do, and I guess maybe that's where it all falls apart for me. If I had a better idea of where he was headed and an understanding of who Superman is to him, then maybe this kind of stuff wouldn't bother me as much as it does. But unfortunately, I have no idea where he's going. I don't particularly care for Leviathan. If this is the same Leviathan from the Grant Morrison Batman series, I again, they're not really an organization that I think is very interesting. They seem very old and tired, and a lot of cliche, you know, a secret organization bent on world domination. I mean, it might as well be a claw out of Inspector Gadget, right? It's just menacing and mustache twirling, but doesn't really feel menacing. And again, good for a crime noir story. If Bendis was trying to tell a story about the Question, yeah, perfect organization for a perfect antagonist for the Question to go up against. But Superman, nah. It's part of why, as I said, I'm liking the Superman title so much more. At least there, the threats feel much more superheroic. And again, maybe it's just Bendis is trying to do something different, something that hasn't been done with Superman before. I mean, we did have the Adventures of Superman stories in the Triangle era, where it was a little more focused on Inner Gang. And that kind of worked, but even those were my least favorite stories of the Triangle era, because again, I felt like it wasn't really an organization that was really kind of worthy of Superman. You know, he seems kind of above that kind of street level crime. But you know, of course, a lot of those stories had to do with Gangbuster or the Guardian going up against Inner Gang, kind of the extended supporting cast of Superman. So you know, that was okay. It felt like when Superman got involved, the plans of Inner Gang got foiled pretty easily, actually, even if Superman wasn't able to find out, or Clark Kent actually wasn't able to find out or track who was behind it. But again, I mean, based on all that, this story's been told. Again, I'm just not sure what Bendis is trying to do, but whatever it is, I'm not really enjoying it. As I record this issue, Action Comics 1008 just came out. It is an improvement over this, but again, part of the reason I dislike this issue so much, it goes far beyond this crime noirish feel of a Superman story, and has everything to do with the mischaracterization in my mind of Lois and her actions in this issue, which are a complete betrayal of Superman and Clark. So again, I encourage you to reach out to me and let me know how wrong I am, if that's your take, or if you agree with me, you know, let me know, and please tell me why you think what you think. I'm very curious. Because maybe I'm missing something. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for joining, as always, listening to me rant. I feel like I don't do it that often, so I do apologize. And I wasn't necessarily planning on getting this deep and going that negative, but I just can't help it when I look at this issue. It just bugs me so much. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The Comic Source is a member of the LRM Podcast Network, so when you visit the site, be sure to check out some of our other podcasts like Los Fanboys, our official movie and TV podcast, hosted by Joseph Jammer Medina, Netflix and Chill, hosted by Nick and Carrie, covering a wide variety of film and television topics with Game of Thrones and Star Wars as particular favorites, and finally, Mike and Mark's Marvelous Adventures, as these two former athletes share their love of sports and geek culture by chatting about anything and everything sports and geek related. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.